Certainly we understand that all of us, whether we're managers or workers, all of us are individuals. We have different personalities. We think differently. We all have different needs, wants, values, expectations, different goals in life. We're just not made from the same mold. We all want to be treated as special persons because we are unique. We are one of a kind. We all are at different places in our lives. We perceive things differently depending on where we are at various times. Being liked may be important to us today. A year from now, it may be more important to us to be recognized for what we have accomplished. Looking at today's workforce brings the concept of individuality into sharp focus. Managers need to recognize people as individual and to work with their individual differences. This recognition goes actually one step further. Because each of us is an individual, we are all motivated differently. The more managers know about motivation, the more successful they will be in working with people. An employee's ultimate productivity and success in the organization hinges on this very concept of motivation. Motivation involves feelings that drive someone toward a particular objective. By understanding and applying basic motivational concepts, managers can create an environment that supports a worker's desire to work, thereby getting the extra effort from that worker. One factor to look at is an employee's needs. Each of us, whether manager or worker, each of us has needs. Needs represent deficiencies that a person is feeling at a particular time or things that are missing from a person's life. These needs create tensions that result in wants. This, in turn, leads us to perform some act that relieves that tension. We then remain satisfied, tension satisfied, needs and wants fulfilled, until the next need occurs, and then the cycle, of course, starts all over again. Needs can be strong motivators in the work environment where there is a way provided by management to satisfy these needs. For example, employees who want to join a country club, move to a more desirable neighborhood, or send their children to expensive private colleges, and they may do superior work to earn a promotion if that promotion brings a pay increase to make those things affordable. Salespeople who are paid on commission may also work hard because their efforts translate directly into financial resources, which they need to maintain or improve their present standard of living. Managers are responsible for providing the work environment where people can meet their needs. As a result, the needs of the organization will be met, employees will be motivated, and productivity will be increased. Managers also need to recognize that a satisfied need does not motivate people. If you have the home you always wanted, you know you can afford the food that you want whenever you're hungry, then these things no longer motivate you. But something else does. More complex needs, such as more prestige, may become a priority for you. The challenge for management is to provide the ability to satisfy these more complex needs in the work environment. A tool that managers can apply to understand human needs was developed by Abraham H. Maslow in his book, Motivation and Personality. Maslow developed a 5-level sequence or hierarchy of human needs. The major point of this hierarchy is that each need level must be generally satisfied before the person attempts to fill those needs on the next level. The first two needs are considered primary or lower order needs. The remaining three are secondary or higher order needs. The needs can be divided as such. We have physiological needs. Physiological need is the fundamental need for food, clothing, and shelter. People must be able to satisfy this need before they acknowledge any of the higher ones. Someone who faces death by starvation or exposure may resort to murder or cannibalism to meet fundamental life-sustaining needs despite what society might think. Work satisfies these needs if an employer pays wages or salaries that allow employees to buy the simple necessities. And then we have the safety and security need. Safety and security need is the need to avoid bodily harm and the uncertainty about one's well-being. People become conscious of this need after they fulfill the first one. This kind of need satisfaction would come from tenure for a college professor, a union contract defining policies and procedures for layoff for a steel worker, or insurance and retirement programs for employees. Then there are social needs. Social need is the need to be accepted by people whose opinions and companionship you value. On the job, pleasant relations with coworkers. These pleasant relations with those that you work with certainly help meet people's needs. The traditional office conversation at the water cooler reflects employee needs to interact socially as well as their official business roles. The group's employees form a lunchtime or also a result of their need to be social. Other areas of life, involvement in religious, civic, and professional organization activities with family and friends also satisfy them. But then there are other needs. They're not only the physiological needs, the safety and security needs, the social need. Another area is the esteem need. Esteem need is the need to feel important, to feel admired, to feel worthwhile. Like the previous level of need, this one is fulfilled by a combination of activities on and off the job. Although work can fulfill this need by giving out prestigious promotions, a high salary, and organizational status symbols, some employees disregard job-related fulfillment, choosing instead to pursue an outside activity that brings them praise and respect from others. Perhaps you've worked with someone who, although not a spectacular employee, was a recognized expert on rare coins, an authority on boating safety, or perhaps the local baseball commissioner. And then there's another area of need, not only the physiological need, the safety need, the social need, the esteem needs, there's self-realization or self-actualization need. Self-actualization or self-realization need is the need to get the maximum reward from one's experience. In other words, to maximize one's skills, one's abilities, and one's potential. The capstone in Maslow's hierarchy, it is reaching your potential. A characteristic of people who are self-fulfilled through their work is rising to the top of an organization, a trait shown by many top executives of large corporations. The possibility of attaining self-fulfillment in work attracts many entrepreneurs to start their own business. Self-actualization can also be achieved by pursuing a variety of activities. A multimillionaire business owner who takes flying lessons and teaches life-saving techniques at the local Red Cross, or a registered nurse who lobbies for environmental issues and restores furniture, both combine work and hobbies to achieve self-fulfillment. Maslow's view of motivation challenges and assists managers to identify the needs of each worker, an often difficult task. By analyzing comments, attitudes, quality, personal characteristics, quantity of work, the manager can begin to identify the particular level of need that each one is trying to satisfy. Then the manager can try to build into each job the opportunity to satisfy these needs. Each supervisor is a catalyst to motivation. If the work experience is improved, thus satisfying certain needs more fully, employees will be motivated and the manager will harvest the benefits along with them. Now, in addition to Maslow's model, which is certainly a classic in managerial study, a second theory has been developed to assist managers with motivation. It is the motivation maintenance theory. Frederick Hertzberg, another well-known observer of management, developed a theory of motivation in his motivation maintenance model. Hertzberg's research indicated that two sets of factors or conditions affect how people behave in organization. These two sets of factors are maintenance and motivational factors. The first set, maintenance, or sometimes referred to as hygiene factors, are those job factors that prevent dissatisfaction but do not generate satisfaction or motivate workers to greater effort. Certain maintenance factors would include salary, in other words, adequate wages, salaries, and fringe benefits. They would also include job security, company grievance procedures, and seniority privileges would be involved in this. Maintenance factors would also involve working conditions, such as adequate light, heat, ventilation, hours of work. Also, a maintenance factor would be status, such as privileges, job titles, and those symbols of rank and position. Maintenance factors would include company policies, such as the policies of the organization and the fairness in administering these policies. Also involved would be the quality of technical supervision, whether or not the employee is able to receive answers to job-related questions. And also, in the area of maintenance factors, would be the quality of interpersonal relations among peers, supervisors, and subordinates. In other words, social opportunity as well as the development of comfortable operating relationships. Hertzberg found that these factors are often taken for granted. Workers feel that management is morally obligated to provide them, so when they do exist, the response is neutral. A package of such fringe benefits as sick leave, paid vacations, health and insurance, and a pension plan will not make workers do more than they must. Take them away, though, cancel company-paid medical insurance, and employees quickly become dissatisfied. The second set, motivation factors, are those job factors that provide satisfaction and therefore motivation, but whose absence causes no satisfaction to be achieved. Hertzberg's motivational factors are, number one, achievement, opportunity for accomplishment and for contributing something of value when presented with a challenge. Number two, recognition, that is acknowledgement that contributions have been worth the effort and that the effort has been noted and appreciated. Number three, responsibility, acquisition of new duties and responsibilities either through the expansion of a job or by delegation. Number four, advancement, opportunity to improve one's organizational position as a result of job performance. And then number five, the work itself, the opportunity for self-expression, personal satisfaction, and challenge. Imagine a worker in a manufacturing plant who has a chance to advance to foreman. This opportunity may make the worker more satisfied with the job and motivated to do it more efficiently and productively. If the job contained only those fundamental maintenance factors mentioned earlier, however, the person will not necessarily become dissatisfied with it, and he or she could perform satisfactory nonetheless. The hygiene factors operate in a range between no satisfaction if they are present in the work environment to high job dissatisfaction if they are not present. The motivators, if present in the work environment, can provide high satisfaction. If not present, no satisfaction can result. After studying Hertzberg's factors, you can understand why employers who try to motivate employees with pay raises and other basic factors of job satisfaction are bound to be disappointed. If management includes automatic cost of living allowances in the company's compensation program to help workers keep pace with rising prices, for example, these pay increases simply maintain the status quo. They have no motivational power. Employees perceive them as maintenance factors, things that management should give them because it's only right. Hertzberg's view of motivation differs from, but does not conflict with, Maslow's view. The supervisory challenge from Hertzberg's standpoint is to give workers the basic, the maintenance or hygiene factors, and enhance the job with ingredients that employees do not take for granted. Think again about the list of motivational factors, and you will see that practically all supervisors have the power to make subordinates' jobs more rewarding by granting them more responsibility, praising their accomplishments, and making them feel that they are succeeding. Top management, by designing and guiding the overall organization, can create an environment that fosters personal growth and advancement throughout the hierarchy. Company after company have come to the same conclusion. Motivated employees are the ones who have responsibility, who are totally involved in their jobs. They have ownership and can make a contribution. managers need to provide responsibility, recognition, and a chance for achievement. The maintenance factors are similar to Maslow's physical, safety, and social needs level. The motivation factors are similar to his esteem and self-realization needs. Managers build a comfortable work environment that encourages motivated employees by providing leadership to the employees. I want to talk about that for a few moments. Whenever one person influences an individual or a group toward accomplishing an objective, leadership occurs. Leadership is thus defined as the process of influencing a group or individual to set or achieve a goal. There's no one correct way to lead an individual, and certainly no one correct way to lead a group. In different situations, a manager is required to be an educator or a counselor or a judge or a spokesman or initiator of action or perhaps even an order giver. How managers choose to lead, that is their style of leadership, will depend on the interactions among the manager, the subordinates, and the organizational environment. Leadership can be viewed as a special relationship between each manager and each individual or each group. The relationship is in turn influenced by the work environment. Employees with no training or experience need to be told what to do and how to do it, while experienced employees do not need much direction. A job environment that calls for creativity may require a manager to provide assistance, not to direct activities. Leadership can be viewed as situational. Styles need to be adjusted depending upon the situation faced. In practicing leadership, managers use different leadership styles. Now, leadership style is the approach a manager uses to influence subordinates. This influence may take the form of making a decision for a subordinate, guiding the subordinate decision-making, or simply providing a topic for a subordinate to decide on. Thus, a manager has a number of options for a decision-making style. A manager can choose any of these styles depending upon the situation. The range of styles discussed and presented many times as a continuum of styles can be grouped under three basic headings: autocratic, participative, and free reign. The autocratic leadership style is characterized by decision-making solely by the manager. Subordinates are excluded from the process. Variations of this approach find the manager making the decision and then selling it to the employees or making the decision and allowing the group to ask questions. This type of leadership style is appropriate in dealing with a crisis or short deadlines or new trainees or less motivated subordinates who need a firm supervisory style. Managers who use the autocratic leadership style inappropriately, however, deny themselves the value of subordinate suggestions and talents. In addition, limited involvement in problem solving can hinder subordinate's ability to handle additional responsibility and will limit the opportunity for promotion. In a recent poll of chief executive officers of Fortune 500 and Service 500 companies, the findings were that autocratic leadership style is being applied to situations less and less often. As the CEOs tell it, the exercise of control has become less important than the exercise of leadership. The participative leadership style is characterized by the manager involving the subordinates in the decision. The involvement in decision-making is a matter of degree. It can range from first to the last of the following four options or participations. First, the manager presents a tentative solution subject to change based upon employee input. Or the manager presents a problem to the employees and asks for input and then makes a decision. Or the manager defines a problem and the employees make a decision. Or the manager and the employees jointly make a decision. The manager and employees are equal. The use of the participative style should add in building individual employee support and assist in developing the employee's talents. Participation is based on the theory that two heads are better than one. Tapping the talent of employees who know and understand the job should improve the quality of decision-making. In addition, taking part in the decision makes it our decision and not your decision. Finally, understand that people who have been involved in the decision will be better able to exercise judgment and will be more willing to handle greater responsibility. Participation means no more one-man bands. Though reluctant, more managers and organizations are moving to a participatory style. Leaders that are more group-oriented, more participatory, more conscious-oriented, more employee involvement-oriented are reaping benefits in all industries. And then the third style, again, we're talking about some styles of leadership, and we mentioned the autocratic leadership style, we mentioned the participative leadership style, and then there's the free rein, or often referred to as the laissez-faire leadership style. The free rein or laissez-faire leadership style is characterized by the leader permitting the subordinates to function actually independently. The leader exercises little direct supervision over the subordinates, allowing them to use considerable judgment in accomplishing the task. In applying this style, the leader either sets limits and follows work out, and followers then work out their own problems, or individuals set their own goals. Free rein leadership works well when employees understand and support company objectives and know the framework within which they must work. A manager would use a free rein style when dealing with competent, motivated people who have the knowledge and skills to accomplish the task without what we would refer to as direct supervision. The director of a medical clinic, for example, he does not have to be involved in every decision made by the staff of doctors that work there. The same is usually true of a director of a laser research laboratory or the senior partner of a firm which is of certified public accountants. But now we face the question. We've looked at these particular styles of leadership, the idea of the autocratic leader, the participatory leader, the laissez-faire leader. Which style is best? The answer to that question is, it depends. Remember, the best leadership style depends on what? The situation. The best leadership style depends on the situation. The leader, the led, and the work environment. A successful manager needs to be aware, and he needs to vary the leadership style depending upon the situation. By providing appropriate leadership, the manager will increase the opportunity to develop motivated workers and create a positive work environment. In turn, the morale of the workforce should be heightened. Morale is the attitude workers have toward the quality of their work life. In reality, morale is a measure of the quality of the work environment. Morale is important because the workers' attitudes toward the total work life affects the quality and the quantity of their output. Generally speaking, high quality and quantity of output is an indication of high morale. When attitudes toward work are poor, management often has trouble maintaining a high quality or quantity of output. How can we prevent morale problems? Perceptive, employee-oriented managers constantly inspect the work environment for clues that morale is on the downswing. Probably several things that would emphasize or at least give clues that low morale is coming. One would be lateness. A second would be absenteeism. A third is high turnover. A fourth would be employee strikes. A fifth, production sabotage. A sixth, increased rejection of products by quality assurance inspectors. A seventh would be decreased productivity. An eighth would be disregard for safety rules, carelessness that results in injuries. A ninth, extreme criticism of policies, procedures, and rules. And a tenth, excessively critical comments made during exit interviews. These clues lead a manager to search for the causes. They may result from inadequate training, low pay, faulty material or machinery, or an employee's personal problems. Regardless of the source, a manager must recognize and deal with the problems to maintain a positive work environment. Managers can do several things to uncover clues to poor morale. One approach is to check company records on tardiness, absence, quality control, and comments received during exit interviews. Another approach is to observe and listen. Employees' comments to each other, direct remarks to their supervisors, and informal communication through body language are all clues to work attitudes. As an example, one ride attendant at a sprawling amusement park confided, "Whenever we think the higher-ups aren't listening to us or giving us the attention we deserve, we just screw up the roller coaster. The big boys come running to find out what went wrong, which gives us an hour or so to talk to them and get things off our chest. After the problem is fixed and they leave, we feel better, like they know we're alive and things run fine, until we start feeling ignored again, and then another breakdown happens." The investigated managers did not need to read the situation for what it was, a morale problem masquerading as a mechanical one. A more formal way to check on morale is by conducting an employee attitude or opinion survey. This is a questionnaire that lets workers express their feelings about their jobs anonymously. It's certainly thorough, and all workers can be given the questionnaire if management wishes. It's a way to gather honest responses regarding employee morale. This brings us to the end now of number 9.